Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mike Swanson, editor of WallStreetWindow.com. Welcome back to the show, Mike.
Oh, it's great to talk with you.
Mike, is the stock market going to change once everybody's back at work from their summer holidays?
I don't think very much as far as what's going on right now. I mean, if we step back, we can look at two things. One, what's going on with the so-called fundamentals, the economy, and two, what the markets have been doing really over the past year. And when we look at the fundamentals, inflation, the rate of inflation has come down, you know, from where it was a year and a half ago, 9% annualized CPI, to under 4%. And interest rates have gone up to 5.25% in the United States. That's the Fed funds rate. And now, but we're at a moment, though, where the inflation isn't likely to go down anymore in any meaningful way at all anytime soon. The Federal Reserve branch in St. Louis does live updates every day to forecast what the next month's report is going to be, and they're showing that the CPI is actually ticking up just slightly this month. So this rate of decline in inflation, just by going by that, is pretty much done with. And the Fed has gotten slightly more hawkish in their talk because of that. They have hinted they may raise rates again. They certainly are talking about keeping them at this level, not lowering them, for longer than what most investors were hoping for just a month ago. So the Fed fund futures market, the bond market, is not forecasting an interest rate cut by year end or really in the first quarter. The odds are less than 30%. At the same time, it's like a 50% chance of a hike. But say there is a hike. One hike isn't a big deal. It's not a dramatic, you know, change that should derail the whole economy or the market. And then at the same time, the GDP growth, perhaps the most surprising thing, if we think back a year or 2 years ago, is that the third quarter GDP forecast by the Fed, again, this time the Atlanta branch, is that it's actually going to grow in the United States in this quarter, the third quarter, by over 5%. Now, that forecast can be volatile and change, but it's certainly a growth print, not a recession print. So as far as things stand at the moment, there's no reason to think the economy is just going to collapse or there's something dramatic going to happen with it. The Fed, the yield curve in the bond market's been inverted for over a year. At some point, I think there will be a recession, but I don't see any evidence it's starting before the end of this year, most likely some point in the future, next year, possibly. All that said, we flip to the stock market. And I think it's also sending a message that not much is going to happen. We had a big bear market last year, put in a low around October. and have had a tremendous rally. But the market, when it has these cyclical bull markets, and that's what I was thinking we were in back in January, a cyclical bull market historically, you just last 2 to 5 years. And my thinking back then was this would be a very one of the shorter ones, like we saw in the 60s and the 1970s, that typically would last 2 years. So with that in mind, I think things are going to be okay, not another bear market till starting next year sometime, most likely. But in these short-term cycles, most of the gains happen in the first third of it. And when you get to this point in time, stuff starts to flatten out and you just go sideways and nothing really happens with the averages. So I think that's where we're at, where not much is going on. The market is could just trade in a 5% range, the S&P 500, for the rest of the year, up and down. And we just went down the past couple weeks and in August, the start of August. And we've been rebounding the last 10 days or so. So I think that's what we're in for, up and down, and to try to make money in that, it's tough. It makes it so bonds and CDs that can yield a guaranteed rate are attractive, not to hold forever, but I think for a short-term period, they are. And then you have to really be selective and try to find some sector that's somehow breaking out and ready to go up. And the last one I saw like that was shipping stocks, actually, at the end of July, but they've already made their move by now. And at the moment, I don't really see anything in that sort of position.
Is that frustrating for investors? They want something that's going to grow more than 4 or 5%, like you'd see in a treasury bill or a bond.
Not necessarily. I mean, it's frustrating if you're trying to make a huge return in a short amount of time, and there are times when you can do that. There are times when in the market you get a chance to buy low, and we had that chance from October to January, basically, and that time's gone. And so it'll come again. At some point, something better will line up, you know, that you can make a good return on, but it's just not there right now. I mean, it'll come. You just have to be patient. People who are trying to make fast money, therefore, are being forced to try to do it by doing risky stuff, like buy call options. And there's this obsession in the United States of buying NVIDIA because of this so-called AI theme. But that's been played out. NVIDIA is the only AI stock still going up. And it was the strongest stock in the NASDAQ, and that's the real reason it attracted so much interest. But I think like the metaverse, AI has proven that, yeah, some companies will make money from it, but it's not going to change the entire world. I just saw a story this morning that said that the Gannett newspaper publishing company, they own hundreds of newspapers in the United States. They were trying to replace their sports writers with AI. And what happened? The stories were nonsense. And readers made fun of them, and they had to drop the whole thing. They had typos in them and just nonsense stuff. So the AI is not what it promises. It promises it matching the reality. It's so that's not something I would want to bet all my money on.
Well, autocorrect on your cell phone is AI, and look how it messes up stuff all the time. I meant to say, I'll meet you tomorrow, not murder you tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what it's doing with these things. And I just tell you a side story is that a month ago, in the state I live in, I was talking with someone about some election laws, and the question was whether GoFundMe is legal to raise money as a political candidate. And this person insisted it was illegal, and they sent me a quote from the state code of Virginia, that's the state I live in, saying it was, and it had a link to the state code government website. And I clicked it and went to the website, and it talked about something completely different. The quote wasn't there. The topic was completely different. And I went back and I said, where are you getting this from? It's not saying that when I click it. And they said AI Google generated it. So I would be scared to go to a doctor that's using this stuff or a lawyer.
Well, AI, I don't know how good is it at judging, taking a look at a growth on your leg or something and saying, is that cancer? Is that an infection? Because if it blows it and it was cancer, it could cost you your life.
Yeah.
And again, your doctor or practitioner, nurse, has a seasoned eye. They've learned from experience what that thing is the two of them can look very much the same, but then they'll ask you questions. And maybe AI will get it right, or maybe it will decide you're having a baby and you're a man. Technically, I guess it could happen, but most likely not. You're just badly hungover. That's not morning sickness.
That's right. Well, to me, this is all you talk about investing and trading. In the end, sticking to getting away from fads and sticking to things that are tried and true, you know, strategies and your investment vehicles, make, you know, that's the way to go, in my view. And even though short term, I think CDs and bonds are a good buy, they have an inflation risk to them. And therefore, I think owning gold and silver makes a lot of sense too with a portion of your portfolio. And we saw gold and silver both dip in July and early August, and so I think, you know, they're not going crazy to the moon or something right now, so I think, you know, it's a good time to dibble in that too.
We'll have more with Mike Swenson right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mike Swenson. Mike, what's happening on the energy front?
Well, the energy is this area, too, that I think is attractive in the market. Obviously, the price of oil kind of had a big decline from the spring of last year, or June. Well, spring it went over $100 a barrel, and then in June we got up to 120, and we fell all the way down to 65 in May, went back up to 75, retested 65 in July, and came out of that range. And now we're around $81 a barrel. And the point of all that is we had a big correction in the price of energy. It looks like it came to an end, and we bounced back up, and it's going sideways now. Energy stocks doing the same thing. But most energy stocks, though, did not fall as much as the price of oil did. Exxon, for example, continued higher until April, May, hit about 115, and it's around 111 right now. So actually, to me, that's a positive consolidation in energy stock where they perform better than the price of oil. And commodities as a whole had a similar correction where they peaked out last April, May, and made different bottoms between March and July, and have turned up. So I think there is actually a lot of opportunity now in the energy complex and buying them. In fact, perhaps that would be the place if someone wanted. I already own some, so I sold a lot last year. I bought a lot in 2020, sold earlier last year and some this year, and I bought back in last month. So not as much as I sold, unfortunately, but I think it's a good sector to get involved in. And again, a lot of those stocks pay dividends.
The BRIC countries seem to have declared war on the U.S. dollar. However, two of the main players there, the Chinese yuan and the Russian ruble, well, the ruble is rubble. The yuan's really weak. Do they have much of a chance to take on the greenback?
Well, not right now, but I don't have the numbers sitting right in front of me, but if you look over the past 20 years, the percentage of trade in the world, foreign trade, that the dollar is the key currency being used, it's declined quite a bit. But it's a very, very slow decline, and I think it's going to continue, but it's such a slow process that it can take, you know, decades for all that to play out, and I have no idea what other currency would be able to replace the dollar or would as the world's reserve currency because of what you just said, that the yuan is not doing so hot as of late. But to me, this is a slow trend. It's not like some sort of thing that one night you're going to wake up and the whole world has rejected the U.S. dollar. I don't think that's going to happen.
The Chinese government right now doesn't seem to be very interested in bailing out their two largest real estate companies, Evergrande filing for bankruptcy protection, Country Garden, their biggest company, also in big trouble. Is that because communist governments don't know how free market economies work?
I'm not smart enough or know enough about what's going on in China to know the exact answer of why they're not bailing them out. I tell you, my feeling is that China is like a black box of what's really going on in their economy. And that's one reason, except I don't remember what year it was. It was 2009, actually. 2009, I bought like 10 China stocks, and they had pretty good rallies. I mean, this was after the market bottom in 2009, after that March. Maybe I was buying these things in April, May, June, somewhere in there. And it turned out that they rallied a couple months, then they collapsed. And a lot of them, you know, when I bought them, it's so they got good PEs and good earnings growth projections, and it was made up. And these were New York, these weren't penny stocks. These were New York Stock Exchange listed companies with large market caps. And that experience has made me very hesitant to want to buy another China stock.
Yeah, I did see a documentary where a busload of investors would go to the Happiness Flower Factory and go, oh, yeah, this looks like a good investment. 2 hours later, they change the name in front of the factory from the Happiness Flower Company to the Flower Rose Company, and then they bring in another busload of investors. See, look at our great factory. And they hire Caucasian actors to be the president of the company because apparently Chinese investors prefer Caucasians in charge at that particular time. But it was just every 2 hours that the name on the factory changed. So investing in China is kind of interesting. Plus,
yeah,
by law, the Chinese government is your business partner, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, they have to own so many of the shares, right?
Yeah.
So not a game I want to be playing.
What's happening to our Robin Hood people? I know you're not one of them, but you like to keep kind of track of those instant trade on your phone people.
Yeah, I used to. I had a Robin Hood account just to do that, to log into it and see the list of the top hundreds, I think it was, positions. But I actually deactivated the account a couple months ago because I was reading that the amount of trading volume was collapsing among that brokerage company, and the number of accounts had a dramatic decline. So in my thinking was that they're not that important anymore in the financial market, that they've been, as a whole, wiped out so much that they were going to become a non-factor. So I think that's where we're really at with those folks.
Mike, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Well, I just think we're getting a bounce as we end this month. I think it's going to continue over the next couple weeks. We'll have earnings in October, and I don't think, somehow earnings always provide some sort of news for people to buy into, even if they're bad. So, I think this month coming up is going to be different than last month, where we saw the market fall, then bounce. This time we're bouncing first, and then we'll probably get overbought and have another retest of this August low sometime in October or November.
Mike, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you. Great to talk with you.
My guest has been Mike Swanson, editor of WallStreetWindow.com. If you have any questions for Mike or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.